from your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. I'm very pleased today to have a friend of the show back. I know a lot of you love his work. A lot of you actually have all three of his other books. And today we're going to be talking about his latest book, which I just finished this weekend, and it's wonderful. I intend to keep it by my bedside, and as we have this conversation, you will realize why. So let me tell you about my guest. His name is Michael Recchio, for any of you that are new. I have three other interviews with him in the archives. You're welcome to go back in and listen to those. Michael is a trance medium. He also is an author of the book Revelation, another one, Illumination, Your Life After Death, which is a must. Everyone should have that. And today we're going to talk about his latest book, which I just absolutely love. Transmission, what a great title. Enlightening Informing, A Record of Joseph in Public. So I'm very happy to have Michael back. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. Great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have finished this book in time.
It sounds, isn't it?
Well, you know what? I wanted to start the show out. You know, of course I have questions, but I wanted to start the show off with something that you say in the book, which is very important. And I find myself saying the same thing to my own clients when I do readings for them. It's not just the words that we are exchanging during a consultation, and it's not just the words in a book. It's the energy that comes through besides that. It's all the words that are not being said. And I wanted you to just talk a little bit about that, because I don't know for sure whether people understand that.
Yeah, we, as you know, we publish the books ourselves, and the reason we do that is that we've been given them in a certain order, and given the words in a certain order. And Joseph always says that, as you said quite rightly, it's not just the words, it's what's going on beneath the words. It's an exchange of spiritual ideas and spiritual information. And he says that he touches the people who read the book mentally and spiritually as they're reading it. And, of course, he's perfectly able to do that and to help in their understanding of the spiritual concepts that are put forward. It's also a transmission of light. The whole Joseph mission is about transmitting light to each other and to the world to change things before it's too late. So what you're actually taking in is a vibration of light, an illumination, literally, that brings to you concepts that are not new. They're concepts that you understand as a spiritual being, as the spiritual being that you really are. Concepts that have been masked, because here we are on Earth in this dense vibration that muddies the water. Mm-hmm. We're looking through fog, we're looking through a glass darkly, whereas if we go within, then we can recontact that light within and bring it out into our surroundings to change things and bring back our spiritual memories.
And well, very well said. Well, I have to tell you this. I was reading away, and you know, because this is a compilation of several live events that you did, and I love the way you structured the book, by the way, with each chapter telling you in advance the questions that are going to be answered, and they are answered. Your answers are always crystal clear. They're never nebulous. You know, when you look at a lot of what's supposedly channeled work out there, and I get to see a lot of it, believe me, they're always dodging the question. People walk away never feeling satisfied, never realizing, you know, feeling that they even got an answer to their question. But, you know, Joseph is extremely direct, crystal clear, can't miss the answer. And it really is wonderfully put together because there's so many questions covered that everybody has. And, you know, for me, you know, in my work, I could tell you it'll save me a lot of time to just refer people to your book.
Yeah, this was at the point that this is the whole book is a transcript of the 12 public trance demonstrations that we did to, as it were, bring Joseph before the public to convince them that we're not sat in a room somewhere making this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
That there is an actual spiritual being called Joseph who takes over my mental and physical faculties for up to an hour and a half in the public trance demonstrations and is answering questions that are put to him by the public. So he's no knowledge in advance of what's going to be asked.
Right, so unlike President Obama, who hands out the questions to reporters in the audience, Joseph is freestyling.
It was quite a scary process, actually, because it's one thing to sit for a trance communication in a closed circle condition, which is what we do once a month. But it was something else entirely to sort of stand there in front of people, sit down as myself, stand up as soon as I was told to do so, and give over my facilities, and then sort of come round an hour and a half later and stagger off, Joseph having delivered this very eloquent and fact-filled address.
Right. So let me ask you this. When Joseph is doing that,
yes,
are you aware of what's coming out of your mouth?
It's a strange thing. It's sort of like being in a dream. Sometimes I'm at a great distance from it. Sometimes I seem to be standing behind myself, looking at myself.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I was ever taken into trance, and I dreaded the experience because I don't like losing consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phobia I have.
Right.
I always used to say to my mother as a child, I sleep with my eyes open, Mum.
Right. Right.
Which, of course, is not the case. So I was dreading trance. And actually, Jane and myself were coming back from a holiday, and I was suddenly taken into trance by one of my guides. And whilst the guide was delivering information to Jane, I found myself in this beautiful cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wondrous place. And I was fascinated by what I was looking at. And in a corner, there was a statue of an angel. But the angel appeared to be moving as I looked at it. And beyond the angel was a door. And I knew that if I went through the door, I'd be away. I'd die. I'd be off.
Right.
But there was no fear in that. I actually wanted to go.
Mm.
I thought to myself, if this is dying, I want to go there.
Right.
As I approached the door, the guide who was talking to Jane said, just a moment, Michael's going too far. I've got to bring him back. And he appeared in this cathedral in front of me and said, not through that door, you don't.
Mm.
Not now. Stay exactly where you are. And then they brought me back out of trance, and there I was in the passenger seat of a car coming back from holiday. So that's it at its sort of deepest.
Mm-hmm.
At other times, I appear to be floating behind myself. And sometimes I think, well, I can influence what's going on at any time. If I want to come back in, as it were, into my body and into my physical mind and start to talk to the audience, I can do so. But I can't. I'm totally out of it until such time as Joseph has moved away.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a feeling of there being two of me for a second. Then there's a feeling of standing almost on a cliff as though I'm going to fall. And then, bang, I'm back. There's a sharp intake of breath. And I'm sort of looking around wearily, realizing that my legs that have been rooted to the spot for up to an hour and a half haven't moved for all that time, and there's intense pain in them.
Of course. Right.
So I hobble off and sort of sit in an office away from the room where the trance is taking place and desperately try to recover, which takes some time.
Well, I could imagine. Well, you know, I've had similar, not exact, experiences. I remember about, you know, 20 years ago when I had gotten news that my father had passed away. The morning of a lecture I was supposed to give in Arizona. And I couldn't imagine how I was going to be able to do that lecture. But, you know, being me, there was no way I wasn't going to show up. But I was a mess. And I remember that once I got on the stage in front of everyone, I was sitting on a chair and I started talking. I started presenting. And I also noticed that I was sitting on a chair across the room watching myself present. And, you know, when it was over, when my lecture was over, I remember, you know, coming back into that body. But I was fascinated that I was actually separate from it. It looked like me, sounded like me, it was me, but I was gone. And it was interesting because this was one of the first lectures ever where someone in the audience said, "Maria, that was so good. Can I come up and give you a hug?" And then everybody lined up to give me a hug as if they knew that I needed that hug. I had told no one of my personal situation. But I realized, you know, the universe always brings you what you need when you need it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I can kind of relate. You know, by the time I got through with my 9/11 speech in front of several thousand people, and it was a speech that was probably the best one I'll ever give because Spirit gave me the words to that, like two sentences at a time at 3 o'clock in the morning for 3 months straight. They would just wake me up and say, "Write this down." And I'd be like, "Can't we wait till the morning when I'm awake?"
Yes.
And I just knew it was going to be a great speech. And once I was done with the speech, I had to run out of the theater because my body was vibrating so fast that I could barely slow down. It was just shaking. And I just assumed I was just pulling on the energy of the universe and my higher self and whatever channel that speech to me, because till today, I still think it's one of the best ones ever given.
That sounds amazing, Maria.
Well, I mean, but the energy was like, you just have to run away. I wasn't in the I wasn't in the mood to talk to fans or people in the audience. I was like, holy crap, I got to get a brush of fresh air. I'm going to just vibrate into outer space here. So I can understand. But let's get back to your book, because I don't know. Yeah, I know it's very new. I don't know how much response you've gotten so far. But I will tell you this. Several nights, I kept your book by my bed, and every night I'd read a chapter or two before I went to sleep. Every single night that I did that, I traveled. I had visits with people, friends of mine that are no longer in physical bodies, that were as real and as comforting and wonderful as anything on this side of life. And it was continuous. And I knew, and that's why I had started with that question, it's not just words being transferred from these pages.
Yes.
It literally just, it was like it blew me through a stargate every night. And it was wonderful. So I want to thank you for that.
It's my pleasure, Maria. And it's Joseph rather than me. I'm just the vehicle, you know.
I understand.
I'm just the car.
I understand that. I keep thinking that myself. I always think of Joan of Arc, who said, "I'm just the messenger. I'm just the messenger." Well, you know, as staying in the flow, as you know, as I told you before we came on air, while you were ringing me up, I was posting my review on Amazon of your book. And then when I was thinking of the questions I was going to ask and what you've said about, you know, traveling to the hereafter and how you channel, last night, I even forgot I had it on my Netflix list, but I got a DVD in the mail called Hereafter, which is about Matt Damon playing a psychic, a real one. And the difference.
Yeah,
and I said, okay, what are the chances this movie arrived tonight, the day before I'm supposed to talk to Michael?
Synchronicity
is an amazing thing, and you know, everybody can get there. Everyone can realize synchronicity in their life, and once they do, you start to see that life is a lot more fun than the field lets us believe. Okay, so we talked a little bit about, you know, who is Joseph, and I know that you work with the Band of Light. Would you like to talk a little about that?
Yes, it's the Band of Light on Earth and the Band of Light in a higher dimension. The Band of Light on Earth is Jane, my life partner, David Openshaw, who is a business partner of ours, and we've worked on hobby titles together, but he's also a very spiritual person. and formats and designs all our books. And there's a gentleman called Tony Clarkson who has a sanctuary of healing in Lancashire, who's been very supportive of us. And our main aim is to get as much of this information through as possible and available to a worldwide audience whilst we still draw breath. All the funds that come to us from the books are put back into advertising and producing more books. And we sit once a month at present, although we'd like to do more, but it's as energy dictates, as energy allows, to bring through a chapter from Joseph, who is a representative of a vast group soul that is concerned about the future of Earth and its people, and not for the first time. And Joseph tells us, instructs us, that if we don't change, if we don't start to send light out, if we don't look to our spiritual connection, inner connection to God, then we are likely to repeat a process that has happened at least twice before, and that is the end of civilization. And I think you can see that in the way that technology is taking over.
Right.
And is making zombies out of people.
Absolutely.
I think you can see that in the way that we might have more in the way of luxuries, but we have less in the way of social interaction and contact.
And life.
I think you can see that in the way that thousands of years of evolution on a physical level has left us exactly where we were thousands of years ago. We're just as violent, we're just as self-centered, we're just as angry, we're just as lost as we ever were. And nothing on Earth seems to be able to change us, seems to be able to make us happy. Because what we're looking for is not really on Earth at all. It's what's within us. It's what we once were and still are, but we've masked. And that is spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm.
And there are rules. There are certain sets of vibration that apply to us dependent on how we think. And we don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most obvious being that what we perceive to be true, we maintain, we draw towards ourselves, just as we were talking about synchronicity a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, we look at the world and we say, what a horrible place it is. And because we think it's a horrible place, we draw more of that to ourselves, and we create more of that that we put into the field of consciousness around the Earth to maintain the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And the aims of the Band of Light are to say, look, there is a different way. And it is simple. It's not complex. It's simple. You have to draw light into your own body, into your own thoughts, into your own projection of thought. And you have to direct light into the trouble spots of the world and into people to elevate them, to reconnect them with that spiritual knowledge that is buried so deep within them, so that we change things and revert the Earth to the wonderful spiritual sphere it once was before it, or whilst it can still sustain us. If we don't, then we will disappear as a society and have to come back and do it all again.
Right. God knows I don't want to do that. Well, you know, that's one of the, and I have to tell you, Thoy, you make it very clear in this book that the purpose of this life is not to come back here. Okay.
Yes.
And I've been saying to myself probably a few times a day, gotta remember, the last thing you gotta think about when you're dropping dead is remember not to come back. So I'm trying to change my consciousness right now. And one of the things I'll compare it to, which is kind of personal, but it makes sense to me. You know, when I was a young woman, I watched my mother go through her menopause. And my mother went through her menopause like a psycho, okay? She became like psychotic, crazy, I mean, totally off the walls. And I remember looking at her from that day on till my own menopause, which was maybe 25 years later. Every single day I said to myself, I will never have a menopause like my mother. I will never have a menopause like my mother.
Yeah.
And truthfully, when it came my turn, I didn't have a menopause like my mother.
Yeah.
So now my new thing is, remember to not come back. I can understand, and Joseph makes it clear in the book that, you know, it seems to be very human to want to come back right away. I didn't finish this. I'm going to miss this. What about this person? What about that person? Kind of reminds you of the story of Lot's wife, you know, in the Bible, where she turns around and says, you know, what about my friends? Poof, she turns into salt. And hopefully, you know, we can all change our consciousness, because you make it very clear that reincarnation as we know it is another construct of the field. It's another way of being trapped here.
Yeah, there's a misconception about reincarnation, and this always worried me as a young man until Joseph explained it in the last few years. If free will is a constant throughout the universe, if we are free to explore what we want to explore and to do what we want to do, why should free will not apply to reincarnation? Why should we go back to the spiritual realms and then be forced back? That is against the constant of free will. Mm. So something else is happening here. And what is happening is that a lot of people go back having made such an attachment to this physical plane that they literally can't see anything else. And as you say, and as Joseph says in the book, they are attracted to, they miss the television.
God, what
they miss the chance in business that they think the next time they can get right.
Mm-hmm.
They miss the relationship that's gone wrong and think that they can fix that the next time round. The next time round I can do better. I want to go back for one more ride on the merry-go-round. And so they pull themselves through volition, through free will, back into physicality.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they aren't advised when they go to that side. They are.
Right.
The spiritual advisors around them say, just a minute, look at the wonderful landscapes and possibilities that are ahead of you here. Wouldn't it be better to continue your spiritual evolution moving up through the spiritual spheres, or cleansing spheres, as Joseph calls them?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, no, I want the business, I want the relationship, I want the sex, I want the beer, I want the television. And they are so hooked into this physical matrix that they draw themselves through free will back into it. There comes a point when mm-hmm. the advisors say, well, if that's what you want, that's what we have to allow to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we will try and get through to you at points during that life to advise you so that perhaps the next time you come back here, you won't want to go back to the earth. But they are powerless to do anything if through free will a person decides to come back to the earth for one more ride.
Right. Well, that's crazy. But, you know, I find when I'm in, you know, doing a read for someone, you know, I see their timeline, their lifeline as perfect, just the way they set it up and what they want to experience, what's really good for them. And that's what I advise them on. But I always tell them, when people exercise their free will in the body and say, oh, no, I don't want to do that, I'm going to do this instead, most of the time that screws up everything.
Yes.
And, you know, I always tell people, man, you got to stick to the yellow brick road, because if this is what you came in to do and you decide to, you know, zig instead of zag, you know, this stuff might just disappear from your possibility this particular time around. But there are people that, and I think the New Age is responsible for that, that promote free will. And I have never seen free will work out well on this side of life for anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, again, keep telling myself, don't go back, don't go back, don't go back. One of the things that seems to be happening a little more in a little more detail, getting a lot more attention, are crop circles. What does Joseph have to say about crop circles?
Well, Joseph very diplomatically answered the question in one of the transsessions on crop circles and said, look, I'm not interested in complexity. I'm not interested in diversion. And if I wanted to, I could take a length of rope and I could take a plank and I could make a crop circle. Or, you know, if somebody wants to communicate in that way, then that's fine. But that's not what we're about. We're about direct communication. This is the 21st century, and there's absolutely no reason why we can't talk directly to you through a medium in concise, contemporary language and answer your questions mm-hmm. in language that you can understand and as simply as possible. He sort of expands from that and says that there is in this new age a great deal of complexity that is offered as spiritual help. And he says that the complexity appeals to the head mind, the computer that we've all got in our heads, mm-hmm. that allows us to interact with this level of consciousness, rather than the heart mind, mm-hmm. the heart mind that knows whether something is correct or not. And so rather than saying, look, you shouldn't look at crop circles, or you shouldn't look at various spiritual books and spiritual philosophies, you should. But in each case, whether it's a crop circle, or whether it's a book, or whether it's a way of approaching life, take that concept in the quiet, in your meditation, within you, to the heart. And don't feel from the mind, feel from the spiritual heart, and ask yourself, through the spiritual heart, does this feel right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to enhance my spiritual evolution? Or is it simply a trip down a blind alley that I don't have time for?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer comes back and says, yep, that's fine, pursue that, then pursue it by all means. But if you get the feeling that you're wasting time or being diverted, mm-hmm. then get back online and find something, whether it's Joseph's message or another spiritual message, mm-hmm. that feels right and harmonic within you.
Right. You have to make sure it resonates to you. And, you know, to
Absolutely.
Me, if something is so complex, it kind of reminds me of religion. You know, everything
yes,
is
absolutely.
So hard to understand. And to me, that's, again, and you say diversion, I say obfuscation. You know, I've always known certain things. And people would say, oh, Maria, you know, where did you get that from? I don't know. I just know it to be true.
Yes.
And Joseph talks about the difference between intelligence and knowing.
Yes.
And he's not the only person that talks about that. And, you know, there's so many people, you know, be in the know. And a lot of people really don't understand that. And I think it comes down to trust.
It does. And it also comes down to the difference between belief and spiritual knowledge. Belief is a system whereby you have to shore up your beliefs with power, with vibration. You have to examine them all the while and shore them up. You believe something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know something, it's not a threat to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you know something, it's part of your being, and nothing can shake it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of traditional religion is based on belief rather than knowledge.
Right.
And Joseph is saying, forget the belief. Look for the knowledge. Feel whether what is being said is correct. If it is correct, and you adopt it as a way of life, you then know it. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to go back to the storehouse every so often and open the chest of the treasure to see the treasure still there. The treasure is a part of you.
Right.
So it's very important that we move away from belief, which is an action, to knowledge, which is a being.
Right. Well, the word lie is clearly placed in the word belief.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, beliefs are like opinions, and we don't need to finish that sentence.
Yes.
Joseph talks about something that I've always known since I was a little girl. And I don't remember, Michael, if I ever told you the story about when I was 4 years old and had my near-death experience.
Yes, I think so, one of our last.
Right, but right after that, you know, I remember when I was healed, because I'm sure I was laid up for quite a while. When I was healed and would go outside and play with my sisters, because Lord knows I had plenty of them, five, I would sit and play with them, and I would amaze them, or should I say amuse them, with crazy stories, so my sisters thought, because I would look at them and say, you know what? I said, while we're here playing, I said, somewhere else, we're old ladies sitting around talking to each other. And, you know, I would tell them about all these different stages of our lives while I was like 5 years old. Because I knew, I just had that knowing that there was no time and that everything was happening at the same time. I mean, that was the way I could express it at 5 years old, but it was a knowledge I always had. And now you have so many scientists coming out and confirming the same things you and I have been talking about probably forever.
Yeah, science is dovetailing slowly but surely with the higher spiritual concepts, which is wonderful. As you said, there's no time. We are experiencing everything from a viewpoint only as part of the now. And people can't grasp that easily. But I always go back to a game show we had here called The Generation Game in the 70s and 80s. And at the end of the game show, a person would be placed behind a screen, the screen would be pulled back, and various objects would go past on a conveyor belt. And they would have to remember the objects. After 30 seconds, the screen would go back down again, and the objects that they remembered, they would win. But my point with that is that the conveyor belt is constantly going past you, but you're only focusing on one object at a time. The others in real time are there, but we don't usually choose to look at them. It's only when we widen our view spiritually that we realize that there, as you say, isn't any time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to measure. You can't capture time in a bottle because there's nothing to capture. It is simply a process of entropy that we attempt to measure.
Mm-hmm. Well, just another construct of this crazy planet that we happen to be spinning through.
It is. It's a physical construct.
Right.
And we build in our own time scale, don't we? We say, well, I'm 40, I'm middle-aged, I'm 50, I'm getting older, I'm 60, I'm terribly old. And then we bundle in with that package an increasing disability.
Right.
Because we've been dictated to by society that that's what's going to happen to us. And it needn't happen to us at all.
Right. Well, you know,
there are cultures that are born, live, and die, and they die only when it's their time, only when it's their time to pass on. And until that point, they have the energies and intellectual capability and spiritual capability that they had as younger people.
Absolutely. You know, when I was, and it's all about the knowing and the understanding and your spirituality. You know, right as I was approaching 60 a few years ago, I had realized that aging is another program of this construct. And I wanted to prove that what they tell you has to happen after 60 doesn't have to happen. And I made a concerted effort. You know, I got myself a physical trainer. I hit the gym. I started eating even better than I already was. And truthfully, I'm in better physical shape than I will guarantee most 25-year-olds that I encounter. And people look at me like I'm an anomaly. And some woman at the gym who happens to be just a few years older than me, you know, was telling me how old she was. We were having a conversation. And she says, well, how young are you? And when I told her, you know, I'm on deck for Medicare next year, she looked at me and she says, oh, my God, you don't look any older than 50.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you say I'm not going to participate in this program and you actively work to break free of, you know, the lies that we're told has to happen, you can change pretty much anything.
Yes, and to realize that it's your personal universe linked into the divine within you.
Right.
And you can go within that universe and recreate yourself on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be tired. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be sick. You can immerse all those conditions in light within yourself and in your meditations and transmute them.
Right. Well, you know, we'll talk about it when we come back from break, but you mentioned several times in the book that, you know, God is, and if God is and we are another form of God, then you can also rationalize in your head, if God is perfect and God exists without illness, then I too exist without an illness.
Yes.
So, we'll be right back. Michael, stay with me and the audience too. We'll be right back right after this break.
Does this world get you down? Are you living your bliss? Tired of therapies that don't offer you any real direction or answers? Did you know that Maria does personal life coaching sessions? Save thousands of therapy dollars and get the direction and answers you need to live an authentic life based on your own personal blueprint for this life. All this typically in just one private session with Maria, not countless hours on a couch. Maria combines her professional experience, life experience, and her hereditary intuitive gifts to get you back on track. Email Maria today for an appointment at maria@maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A at M-E-R-I-A.net. Get on with the best life you can possibly have. Check out the other side of this happy, loving, passionate woman at www.mariaheller.com and avail yourself of the best coaching around, all in the privacy of your home via the telephone. Gift yourself with yourself. Make an appointment today. Write Maria at maria.net.
Okay, welcome back. I'm speaking with my fabulous guest, Michael Recchia. We're talking about his latest book, which I think the title is just smoking hot, Transmission. And we're talking about things that everybody needs to know. And I will tell you this, this book answers so many questions that every human being has. And, you know, I know a lot of you already have a Joseph Library building in your home. I have to tell you, this one's a keeper. And that's why I said to you, Joseph, just from the energy that takes me traveling at night, even though I have completed this book, it'll be right next to my head every night I go to sleep, because it's like a passport out of here. And I love it. You know, I was very delighted to see one of my friends who had passed about 2 years ago. And she and I were extremely close on a spiritual level. We could even meditate together and travel together from different parts of the country. And when she was dying, I did talk to her on the phone, and I said to her, remember, wherever you end up going, I will find you, right? And she said to me, if anybody can find me, you're the one. And she did die of a pretty hard, you know, disease-ridden death, so I've had very little contact with her. And then there she was 2 nights in a row. And, you know, she appeared to be, you know, about 30 years old. She was in great shape. You know, I recognized her from behind. I knew it was her because there was a crowd there. And when I called out to her and she turned around, we just embraced and started kissing each other. I was so happy to see her.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, these are the kind of experiences people can have if they can stretch their mind and realize that all things exist just a dimension away.
Yes, the closed mind is the dangerous one. And I think it's so arrogant of us to say that we understand even the world that we live in. Mm. We understand so little about it.
Right.
You know, if somebody said to you, well, you know, I believe in Australia, you can't, unless you've been there to the country, you can't even prove that, can you?
Mm-hmm.
You can't say to someone, yes, Australia exists, but I haven't seen it. You've got to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the minds have to unlock themselves a little bit and go there through meditation. See what's out there. See what's in there, what's within us, what we're capable of. Contact the inner self, the greater self. And the benefits far outweigh the time that is spent in seeking that spiritual information.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be flexible.
Got to have an open mind, because I'll tell you what, I honestly believe, like the Native Americans say, that how do we know that this life here isn't the dream? And that the dream state is the real life. And, I every morning I wake up and I say, oh, my God, I'm back here. I had such a pleasant visit out of here. And now I'm back here. I'm like, oh, no. But I know I came in for a different reason than most people. And Joseph talks about that in his book. Not everyone that comes back to Earth comes back because they miss TV or bananas or whatever.
No.
Okay. But there are people that come back to literally to make a difference.
Yes, a specific mission in the hope that they can bring through channel information or live by example for others. And many of these people fall by the wayside, not because of their own fault, because the effects of the field are so strong upon them. There are so many diversions here, and once one of these light bringers has incarnated, the field will do all in its power to pull them off course.
Absolutely.
To submerge them in the masking effect of itself, so that they lose that ability to connect to the spiritual side of life. And it is so important with our children, if they show some spiritual ability, to nurture that spiritual ability.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say, don't be silly, you're not seeing somebody standing in the corner, but to say, that's wonderful. And to seek out people who can develop them into the mediums and competent channelers that they are destined to be, so that they can help the rest of us. So that they can bring that information to the rest of us, so that we can change this world, so that we can change ourselves, and so, as we've said earlier, we can get out.
Absolutely. So, you know, when he says, you know, people need to pray for the people that are here to make a difference, because they really need the support. You know, I remember when I was a kid, especially after that experience and living in, as you can well imagine as an Italian, Michael, an Italian Catholic neighborhood. Yes. And here I am, 5 years old, prophesying what's going on in the neighborhood and who's doing who, who's stealing from who. You know,
oh my goodness.
What woman's got a crush on my father, you know, delivering these messages at I was like 5 to 10. And I got slapped so much, and I mean, some of the old Italian ladies used to call me the Mala Cristiana, okay?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it was terrible, and it wasn't like I had a support system or any teachers to help me. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the mid-50s. And luckily, I had a grandmother who understood because she was very spiritually gifted. But I realized at a young age that I had to keep my mouth shut because it was only drawing evil and bad to myself. I mean, you know, I was name called, I was treated like trash, you know, people avoided me like I was Dracula walking down the street. And it wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I decided to pick up that mantle again, because it was very difficult.
I think we need to encourage discussion groups too. I think discussion groups in the right form. Discussion groups where, as they sit together, they dedicate themselves to God, to the God within, and to the protection of God within, and ask that what comes out during their discussion time is of worth to them and to others spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should explore the possibilities of spirituality, explore the concepts of spirituality as groups. Get back to that sort of family group mentality where we say, for example, what do we think about life after death?
Mm-hmm.
Because in many areas, it's taboo. You don't talk about it.
Absolutely.
I have friends who won't talk about it, mm-hmm. won't consider it. They'll consider it when it happens, on the day that it happens, and that's too late.
Absolutely.
And to question the nature of God, to question the nature of the earth, the nature of creativity, the nature of physicality. To question what we are. I find it amazing that many people live from birth to the grave without ever asking, what am I? You know, I look in the mirror, what is this I'm looking at?
Right.
Where is the seat of my consciousness? Because you will know as a medium, Maria, that the seat of consciousness is very often not where it appears to be, as we've spoken about earlier.
Right.
You appear sometimes to be floating as a consciousness in front of your physical body and only loosely permeating it.
Well, I mean,
we need to discuss these things.
What giant spirit would want to stay trapped in a little human body all day long?
Yeah.
You know, you do cover some things in the book that seem to be topical, because a lot of people lately have been talking about it with me. And
yeah.
One fascination a lot of my students, clients are talking about are the elementals, the elemental kingdom, the divas, and the animals.
Yes.
And I was so happy to see Joseph address that in the book, you know, because it's funny. I went to see my body worker yesterday, and she had a big dog and a very small cat that they just got. And they were both amazed that the cat, who's very vicious to everybody, was all over me, rolled over for me to pet its stomach. And I told them in a joking way, I said, well, I have animal magnetism. I draw all the animals. And I did tell the owner, I said, I always believe that animals are smarter than humans.
Oh, absolutely.
And
they don't have,
and then there's
don't
Joseph.
Have preconceptions of humans, for one thing. They don't have our hang-ups. They are aware of their connection to each other. And many people say, well, if they're aware of their connection to each other, why do wild animals attack each other and eat each other? And this is because they're... mental matrix has been polluted by the effects of the field.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually our aggression that we pour into the field on a daily basis. It's our upset, it's our discontent, it's our unhappiness, and it's our lust for power because of the effects of the fall that Joseph talks about in the book, The Fall, that permeate the physicality of the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are pushed to devour each other, to harm each other, but it's not their natural state, just like it's not our natural state to harm each other. And also at this point in our existence, if we truly wish to connect spiritually to higher realms, we should be still stimulating the higher atoms of our bodies, the higher atoms of our spiritual bodies. And we don't stimulate those by eating meat. If we eat meat, we are absorbing the terror of the animal that we put it through at the point of its passing. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrible thing to do. And to cause harm to intelligent creatures is also a terrible thing to do, in my view, and also in Joseph's.
Right, while also causing harm to your own physical body. Because
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Nothing good's coming out of that.
Just sits there and rots, and eventually you rot with it.
Well, I had a vegan author on once, and he said that you need to look at your body as not a cemetery for dead carcass.
Yes.
And I mean, it was a disgusting sentence, but man, it was a powerful one.
It's absolutely true.
Right,
absolutely.
And Joseph talks about, I like that he says, you need to eat food with sunlight in it.
Yes. Yes, it has to absorb the light. Mm-hmm. It's the food. He always says to me before I go into a trance session that for a week I should eat leafy green vegetables and very natural food to absorb that light. Mm-hmm. I mean, our natural state as the spiritual beings that we really are, in our natural state, we absorb light from the atmosphere around and within us. Mm-hmm. We're not, of course, ready to do that yet. But the first stage, I think, is to move away from the cruelty we show to our animal brethren and not to see them, not to treat them with callousness, not to look at animals as a callous attitude, because we think we need meat. We don't. Mm-hmm. We don't need to harm them. And we can, as you say, communicate with them.
Absolutely.
I've on occasion been asked to go and speak to animals, and very specific details come from those animals as to their past, as to what's happened to them, and as to why they're unhappy. And all of those details have been confirmed by the owners of those animals. Mm-hmm. So we're not communicating on a speech-to-speech basis. We're communicating on a spiritual mind, spiritual heart-to-spiritual heart basis. They are wonderful, wonderful expressions of God and should be allowed to live the joyous lives they're supposed to live.
Now, are animals here to protect or support the elementals, the Deva kingdom that basically keeps the earth alive?
They are, as Joseph explains it, an expression of the Devas who form the background through which we move in our natural spiritual state. In other words, as the angelic beings that we truly are, in the natural state, and not the skewed state that we find ourselves in on Earth because of the effects of the fall, we would visit this beautiful sphere that it really is beyond the masking effect of the field, and we would have a landscape, for want of a better word, to move through, mm-hmm. so that we could experience and take that experience back to our God, to add to the experiences of God. And that the Devas provide that landscape. The fact that we've got animals and various forms other than ourselves is to do with the Devas providing an expression of physicality that eventually we could move into after we had lost ourselves into the effects of the fall. The Devas remain here, trapped because of the effects of the fall, and also to support us until such time as we move out of that mistaken spiritual thinking back to what we once were. Mm-hmm. And the animals that we see are linked together as part of the Deva mind, the Deva heart mind, much as we are linked together as parts of group souls on higher spiritual levels.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, I've always believed and still will say it now, you know, that every one of my listeners and every one of my guests is part of my group soul. And, you know, that's who I'm here for. You know, I've always known that. I got to find my soul group, wake them up, and say, get ready to get the hell out of here and not come back.
Yes. I mean, ultimately, the group souls, as they move on into higher spheres of enlightenment and understanding, merge together to form greater group souls. Because the truth is that we are part of God. We are all one. We are all fragments of the one. And so as we move through the spiritual spheres, we move closer back together, still retaining our memories, still retaining our individuality, but becoming a greater part of the whole again, more integrated than we are at present. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the spiritual journey we can partake of whilst we're still on earth, through meditation, through the understanding of each other, and through the transmission of light. We can understand that moving together as one doesn't mean losing our individuality. If you get rid of the ego, you find yourself.
Right.
Get rid of the earthly ego, you find yourself, and you enjoy more individuality because you are an individual viewpoint of God. But at the same time, you are aware of being part of everyone that you come into contact with and everyone that you don't come into contact with physically. Mm-hmm. And if we're all one, which we are, if it's all part of one creative being, how can we do harm to anyone else?
I agree, but when you look at the Earth, it surely doesn't look like anybody's all one. It looks like everybody wants to kill everybody for a million
Absolutely.
Different reasons.
Absolutely, because we're coming from the wrong point of view. Mm-hmm. And that is back to the skewed thinking that happened at the time of the fall, where we speeded up the vibrations of the Earth through a spiritual experiment, for want of a better word, these are just words, and locked ourselves into this dream. You were talking earlier about life being a dream. It is. But we believe the dream instead of the reality beyond the dream. We've locked ourselves into it, which is why there's such a movement to bring us out of it through righting the vibrations of the earth plane, through bringing light into the earth and into its people so that they remember who they are and set things right again. And until they do that, there is just a repetition of what we see around us and have seen around us since the beginning of this civilization. We may be advancing in technology, we may be advancing in science, but we are still as primitive and as angry and as warlike and as violent as we ever were, because we're not putting in the missing ingredient. And the missing ingredient is the God within that we have to go to project outwards to finally change things. It's also a matter of personal responsibility. And those are two words that send shivers up a lot of spines.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Particularly in today's society. It's not my fault the doctor will make it right. It's not my fault the solicitor will make it right. Mm. It's not my fault the builder will make it right.
Right.
It's never my fault. It's always someone else's fault. And I don't want to make it right myself. I don't want to put anything in. And it's a spiritual law that you have to donate something in to get something out.
Absolutely. I mean, every now and then I see a poster on Facebook that says, you know, you can't blame society. We are society.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But responsibility is a scary word for a lot of people, Michael. That's for sure. I'm sorry, by the way, I don't know how I spaced out on mentioning your book, The Fall, because I think I got more emails about that book than any other book. So, so I guess I had this book on my mind today. Joseph, one of the things I'd like to conclude with is something Joseph talks about, that when you have a love link with someone, it's eternal.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of John Lennon, you know, the love you make is the love you take.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people who have lost children or, you know, lovers or parents or whatever, and they think that that's over. Can that ever be over, a love relationship?
A true love relationship can never be over. It's what we are. It's what we express. It's a true link and a bonding. And that bonding can never be taken away from us. It's very sad that, again, because of the effects of the fall, we have to, for a time, lose sight of people. Mm-hmm. There was a time before the fall when quite naturally we would return to the higher spiritual realms, and we're aware of those higher spiritual realms whilst we were here on earth. Again, it's the masking effect of the field. And it's very sad, but it's, again, something that we need to put right. But no, those people are never lost. They're never lost to us. And we can also, as you talked about, traveling at night. We very often go to reunite with them, to talk to them. They are aware of what's happening in our lives. Mm-hmm. Again, it's an unfortunate effect of the fall that when we come back in the morning, for the most part, the field masks that memory is turned off again because we've returned to denser physical matter. But whether you are aware of that memory or not, be assured, I'd like to say to everyone who's listening, be assured that you do visit those people, that they are active in your life, and that they will never, ever be taken away from you, nor you from them.
Well, that's excellent and well said. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today. And
it's a great pleasure,
we'll
Maria.
Certainly do this again.
Yes, I'd love to do.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Michael Recchia, and I got the possibility of getting Michael on as a regular co-host maybe every other month, so let me know what you think. Anyway, thanks for listening and supporting the show, and I will see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.